book genres are so 20th century. No, 19th century. They made sense when each book needed to be placed on a physical shelf so people could find similar titles. But what if you want to find a vampire romance, a post-apocalyptic comedy, a Western mystery where the main character is an android, a World War II adventure with magic, or a story based around a character of any race or religion or gender, set in any time or any place you choose? Scribble now brings searching for books into the 21st century, even if you're looking for one set in the 17th. Find the books you'll love by selecting the story elements that matter to you at scribble.com. You'll never look for books the same way again. Search by story elements, only at scribble.com. That's scribble.com.
In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums!
C-R-I-M-E-W-A-V. You're rolling with The Crime Wave, the internet's first and only podcast devoted to the crime short story. I'm Seth Harwood, your host, the first name in crime podcast fiction, and I'm ready to bring you this week's story. The Crime Wave is produced by Mystery Dog, Aldo Calcagno, and it is not safe for your minivans. That means it might contain swearing, violence, and all types of shit.
Bad Debt by Jonathan McGoran. It wasn't a lot of money at first, barely enough to buy into a small stakes game. But Jerry Costa owed me $200. When I saw him in the back of Gary's bar on a Saturday afternoon, I asked him for it. He must have sensed me approaching, because he jumped and turned around with a start. It kind of annoyed me that he looked relieved to see it was me. "Hey, Bliss," he said as I sat down next to him. I hate it when people call me Bliss, but it's my name. Hardly anybody calls me by my first name, Greg, and I don't tell them to either. You tell someone to call you by your first name, it's like telling them you're friends. Most people, I don't want to be my friends. Definitely not Jerry Costa. "Hey, Jerry," I said. "Say, you got that $200 you owe me?" It wasn't the first time I'd asked, and I didn't expect it to be the last. I brought it up whenever I saw him, so it didn't become one of those things where he never paid me back, but somehow he used to owe me money, like it was a thing of the past. Still, each time he blew me off, he got closer to crossing that line where he was a confirmed deadbeat and I was out $200. He seemed comfortable with that. I didn't know Jerry that well, but I'd known him a long time. In high school, he used to get his ass kicked pretty regularly, but never by me. I even stepped up for him once or twice. He'd been kind of nervous and sneaky then, but not too bad a guy. Our school was pretty fucked up, and Jerry was small. Probably made sense for him to be nervous and sneaky. These days, he was working for a guy named Corson. I had no idea what Jerry did for the guy. Maybe bookkeeping. Probably fetching coffee or something. I couldn't imagine it was much more than that. Corson was a loan shark. Pretty minor league, but he ran a high-stakes game I had my eye on. I already had a seat at one big game, and I was doing pretty good, but if I was going to make any kind of real money, one game a week was not enough. I figured maybe Jerry could get me into Corson's game. That's why I lent him the money. But that was before I realized how much of a fuck-up he had become. So after 6 months, when I sat on the stool next to him and asked one more time for my money, I was surprised when he looked thoughtful for a second, then lightened up like he just remembered where he left it. "Yeah, Bliss," he said, sounding almost surprised. "I got your money." I half expected him to pull the money out of a hidden money belt or a secret pocket in the lining of his jacket. I knew he did stuff like that. Instead, he said, "I just need you to give me a ride to go get it." I was pretty sure he was full of shit, but I also knew that if I didn't play along, he'd always be able to say he tried to pay me back that time, but I wouldn't give him a ride. That's how I ended up standing on a porch in the middle of Logan. It was a fucked-up neighborhood of run-down houses separated by patches of hard-packed dirt or weeds tall enough to hide a patrolling pit bull. Jerry talked shit the whole ride over, buzzing like a gnat in my ear, giving me directions and telling me his story about how this guy owed him money. Even as we walked up the wide wooden steps to the porch, I kept waiting for him to admit he was bullshitting me and go back to being the deadbeat we both knew he was. Instead, when I stopped at the edge of the doormat, Jerry took two more steps and rang the doorbell. The inside door was open, but the storm door was closed, dented white aluminum with a cloudy plexiglass window. The house was too dark inside to see anything, and if the inner door hadn't been open, I would have thought no one was home. The plastic doormat had a half-plucked daisy and the word "welcome" written in patchy fake grass, like it didn't really mean it. Jerry pressed the doorbell a second time almost immediately, looking around at me with a nervous smile. Then he took a few steps back, so he was a couple of feet behind me and off to the side. I gave him a look. "Guy owes me money," he said with a shrug. "Might not answer the door if he sees it's me." I was starting to say, "Get over here," because I wasn't there to collect his debts for him, but I stopped when I heard a faint, sliding, metallic click from inside the house. I didn't recognize the sound right away, but it seemed like Jerry did, or maybe he was expecting it. He grabbed the railing on the side of the porch, swung his legs over, and disappeared. By then, I recognized the sound too, someone racking an automatic. I dropped down low as the first bullet punched through the plexiglass, and I wondered, in the back of my mind, what kind of asshole shoots through his own front door. Two more bullets came through the door, the bottom half this time, tearing through the aluminum and leaving little holes surrounded by raised rings of silver. The planks on either side of my feet popped like popcorn, one side, then the other, sending up two little clouds of splintered dry rot. The door kicked open, and the guy that came through it was at least 6'4", maybe 300 pounds. He had on a big denim jacket, buttoned up tight. It must have been at least XXXL, but the fabric was still pulling at each buttonhole. His jeans billowed out around his legs. His massive head was round and bald, and he had a big bushy beard, like his afro had slid off his head and settled on his chin. He came at me with his gun extended, snarling in anger, but with something else, too, like he was scared, maybe, or crazy. I was already down low, and he was closing too fast for me to run away, so I closed on him instead, getting behind the gun before he could react. I grabbed him by his jacket and pulled, letting myself fall down and back, using his momentum against him. He kept coming forward, his face surprised to be so close to mine. I braced a foot against his belly and rolled onto my back, pulling him up into the air, but not quite over. I know time can seem to slow down in situations like that, but for a moment he seemed to stall right above me, looking down at me, still surprised. I could feel his weight on my leg, and I wondered if he was going to come down on top of me, wondered if that alone would kill me. He couldn't have been up there for more than half a second, but with my muscles screaming and my back compressing under his weight, it felt like a long time. As I looked up at him and he looked back at me, I could see the surprise in his eyes turn back into anger. His hands were braced against the floor, but now he seemed to remember he had a gun in one of them, and he shifted his weight so he could point it at me. That was enough incentive, and with a grunt, I heaved him the rest of the way. His eyes rolled up, looking ahead to see where he was going. I looked up, too, and saw the edge of the porch, and then open space. As he flew head first off the porch, I expected him to put his hands out to break his fall, but instead he two-handed the gun and pointed it at me. As he disappeared behind the top step, I heard an explosive bang and felt the impact as the bullet slammed into the steps. Then I heard a thud. I lay there for a second, unable to move. Not a good thing when someone's trying to kill you. My back felt like it was fused to the porch. The muscles in my thigh screamed as I got to my hands and knees. I knew I had to get out of there, but I couldn't run yet, so I peeked over the edge of the porch to see what was waiting for me. Whoever the guy was, he was down, and he was not getting back up. He had landed on the sidewalk. His big head was no longer round. The top was flat, and the sides were creased and bleeding. His eyes were open, big, dark, and uneven, slightly crossed as they stared into the sky. His fingers were twitching. There was a kid on a scooter looking down at him, about 9 years old. I didn't even notice the kid until he turned to look up at me. Our eyes met for a second, then we both looked back at the guy on the ground as his fingers stopped twitching and blood started trickling out of his ear. This was not the first time I'd seen a guy die, and it wasn't the first time I'd had something to do with it, but it wasn't like I made a habit out of it. "Fuck," I said. The kid on the scooter looked up at me and nodded in agreement. My ears were still ringing from the gunshot, but I was pretty sure the sirens I heard in the distance were real. Sirens were almost constant in Logan, but I knew I had to get out of there anyway. Leaning out over the steps, I looked up and down the block, but there was no sign of Jerry. I didn't want to step over the body at the bottom of the steps, so I jumped over the side of the porch, just like Jerry did. I hit hard, but I stuck the landing. The kid on the scooter was not impressed. I slogged through the tall weeds and started across the street, then stopped and turned to the kid. "Who is that guy?" I asked, nodding toward the body on the sidewalk. The kid looked down, tilting his head and squinting, like maybe it was hard to tell with the head all flattened. Then he looked up at me with the same expression, like maybe he was trying to figure out why I had done that to the guy if I didn't even know who he was. "That's Ibrahim Hudson," he said, like I should know that. "But he don't live there." "Who lives there?" He shrugged. "Nobody." I got in my car and nodded to the kid as I drove by. He nodded back, then scooted around Hudson and continued down the block. I drove straight back to Gary's bar looking for Jerry, and by the time I got there, I was pissed. I still didn't know what had just happened, but I was pretty sure Jerry did. The little shit set me up, and as far as I could tell, it was for 200 lousy dollars. Gary looked up when I walked in. "Damn, Bliss," he said, looking at my expression. "What's up with you?" I saved my poker face for playing poker. "Jerry Costa, you seen him?" "Not since he left here with you. Why?" "Nothing. Little fuck owes me money." Gary shook his head and laughed. That little fuck owes everybody money. I put a $5 on the bar. Call me if you see him. After Gary's, I headed straight for Jerry's place, a Kensington row house with torn blinds in one of the front windows and a towel hanging over the other. I rang the bell, but there was no answer. I knew he wouldn't be there, but just to be sure, I went around to the alley and broke in the back. The place was a mess, but it was hard to tell if it had been tossed or if Jerry just lived like that. I doubt an intruder would have left half a moldy cheese sandwich on the kitchen table. Standing there in Jerry's empty shithole of a house, I could feel the dregs of that adrenaline anger draining out of me, replaced by a tired, empty feeling. Back in my car, I figured if I was going to keep looking for him, I should at least change my shirt. Apart from the dirt I picked up rolling around with Ibrahim Hudson, there was a good chance at least one of the neighbors had seen us. Plus, there was that kid on the scooter. A change of clothes seemed like a good idea. When I got home, I headed straight upstairs for the bedroom and grabbed a fresh shirt. I didn't want to sit down or anything, because then I wouldn't want to get up. I must have left the front door open, though, because when I came back downstairs, I had company. A heavyset older guy in a blue windbreaker was reclining in my Lazy Boy recliner. Standing behind him was an enforcer type with a flat, pushed-in face. I couldn't tell if his face was naturally like that or if someone had actually pushed it in, but it made him look stupid and mean. Reminded me of a kid I knew growing up, had a thing about animals and firecrackers. "You know who I am?" the older guy asked. Part of me figured these guys were trouble, but the part that controlled my mouth said, "I don't know. You wander into my house. You don't know who you are. If it wasn't for the muscle, I'd think you walked away from the hospital. But maybe he's from the hospital, too." The guy in the Lazy Boy smiled. His friend didn't. "My name's Corson," said the guy in the Lazy Boy. He looked older and softer than how I had pictured him. I didn't let on that I knew the name. Didn't seem like a good time to ask about the card game. "This is Bruce," he continued. "His grandma just died of Alzheimer's, so I'd be careful with the stupid jokes." "Sorry about that, Bruce," I said, with enough sincerity to confuse him. I wondered if he was one of those psychotic types who got real upset about his grandma, or one of those psychotic types who didn't give a shit at all. "So," Corson said with a big, wheezy pause, "Ibrahim Hudson." He said it like that explained everything, but it didn't, so I kept quiet. "You know," he prompted me, "the guy you just killed?" "I know who he is," I said, "but I didn't." He cut me off with an upraised hand. "Yes, you did. So let's not talk about that part. He probably had it coming to him, the big dumbass. But unfortunately for you, Hudson owed me money." I had some idea where this was headed, and I didn't like it. "I know the big dumb fuck didn't have what he owed me. That's why he was hiding out." He paused again to breathe loudly. "One way of looking at things is that you just did me a favor, saving me the trouble of having to kill that stupid cocksucker." He let out a short, raspy laugh. "Unfortunately for you, I don't look at it that way. I look at it like there's always a chance he could have paid me. Maybe with the right incentive, I could have convinced him to get it from his mom, or maybe his nephew's college fund. You never know. Bruce here is very good at the incentive part. At the very least, I could have had the satisfaction of killing him myself." He spread out his hands. "Now I got nothing." He was quiet for a few moments, and as much as I didn't want to hear what was next, I wanted these assholes to get out of my house already. "So, Corson shrugged. You killed him, you take on his debts. How much? 5 grand, and I'd like it pretty soon. 24 hours. I got debts too, you know, and the guys I'm dealing with are a lot scarier than me. He laughed again. Of course, I can be pretty fucking scary, too. He looked at Bruce, waiting for him to smile before he continued. You don't want to see us being scary. He seemed to be waiting for a reaction from me, too, but I didn't give him one. How did you find Hudson, anyway? He asked. I've been trying to find that fat fuck for weeks. I wasn't going to mention knowing Jerry just then, but 5 grand was a lot of money, so I threw his name out there, hoping Corson might cut me a break. A friend of mine owes me some money, a guy named Jerry Costa. He tells me this guy owes him. Jerry Costa? Corson's face turned red, and he pounded the arm of the lazy boy, thrashing a bit from side to side as he tried to sit forward. Where the fuck is he? It wasn't quite the reaction I had been hoping for. I don't know where he is. Where the fuck is Costa? Corson demanded, not looking so soft anymore. Bruce smiled and shook his head. I don't know, I told him. I wish I did. Like I said, he owes me money. But he's a friend of yours, huh? Corson asked, his eye twitching. I was reluctant to write off the connection to Corson's card game, but as a connection, Jerry didn't seem to be helping me that much so far. Not really friends, I said. I know him. He owes me money. Corson let out a snort, but his jaw was clenched. That little shit stole 20 grand of my money. He shook his head. He owed Hudson 6. That's why the fat fuck couldn't pay me. He went quiet for a moment, regaining his composure. Then he looked up at me. Here's the deal. You get me Costa, jabbing his finger in the air, and you're off the hook for the 5 grand Hudson owed me. Otherwise, you got 24 hours. Then we start talking incentives. As soon as Corson was gone, I left too, and I brought my gun with me. I knew the type of guy Corson was, and like it or not, I now owed him 5 grand that I didn't have. Best thing would be to get it paid as soon as possible, before he started charging interest or working some other angle, getting his hooks in deep. Jerry Costa wasn't the only guy who owed me money. A man named Frank Vero owed me a big chunk, too. I didn't know Vero well, but I knew he was good for it. I also knew he definitely was not the kind of guy you could rush. Of course, I could just hand Jerry over if I could find him. It would serve him right, the little shit. But I didn't know if I was the kind of guy to do something like that. I'd figure that out once I found him. As I drove, I made some calls, starting with people I knew pretty well, getting some more numbers, making some more calls, working my way toward people who knew Jerry pretty well, people who might know where he was. A couple people gave me his phone number, which I already had, or his address, where I'd already been. Finally, Gary called. He said a guy named Ralph told him Jerry's girlfriend was out of town and Jerry was staying at her house, an address in Roxborough. And if you find him, Gary added, tell him Ralph says he wants his money. I turned the car around and headed to Roxborough. The more I thought about the situation, the angrier I got. My shoulders were so tense that when I saw Jerry from the corner of my eye, I hurt my neck turning to look at him. He was just leaving an ATM machine. I almost drove past him, but instead I pulled up onto the sidewalk and jumped out of the car as he turned the corner, hurrying away, counting his money. I came up behind him and grabbed him by the collar, slamming him against the brick wall. He kind of bounced off it, staggering, but he didn't drop the money. Even when I spun him around and slapped him across the face. "What the fuck was that?" I demanded. "Jesus, Bliss, thank God you're okay," he said, trying to sound relieved. "Christ, I never seen anything like that. Was that big motherfucker on angel dust or what?" He started to laugh, but then he saw my eyes, and he touched his fingers to the welt rising on his forehead. "Hey, hey, hey," he said, holding up his other hand. "Look, I'm sorry about that whack job, but he owed me money. I was just trying to get me mine so I could get you yours." The hand he put up to stop me was the one holding the wad of 20s. I grabbed his wrist and opened his fingers, taking the money and counting it in front of him. $360, I said. "That's right, Bliss, and 200 of it's yours. I was getting you the money I owed you. Fuck Hudson. Fuck that guy. I'll get my money from him when he's not all juiced up." "No, you won't, dickhead. Hudson's dead." He smiled for an instant. Could have been a nervous tic. "Jesus, dead. What happened?" I didn't say anything. I just glared at him. "Right. Well, look, I'm sorry about that crazy fuck back there, but I guess that's over. Now I'm paying you back, so we're even, right?" "No, not fucking right." He cringed a little, like he thought I was going to hit him again. "What do you mean?" "Your man Corson showed up at my house, said Hudson owed him $5,000, and since Hudson's dead, now I owe him $5,000, and he wants it by tomorrow. He also said you owed Hudson, not the other way around, which means you were setting me up for something."
"That's bullshit, Bliss. I didn't..."
"Shut up. You got me into this, so you need to get me $5,000. I want this asshole off my back now. 'Cause you know what else? He said you took him for 20 G's, and if I hand you over, I don't owe him a dime. So get me that $5,000 now, or I'll fucking do it." I looked down at the money in my hand. "I'll keep the rest of this for starters." As I shoved the money into my pocket, Jerry Costa suddenly pulled a gun from somewhere, a snub-nosed revolver. We were close, but he was fast. I thought for a moment that maybe I was dead, but he fired over my shoulder twice. It rang my head again, but it didn't leave any holes. I dropped to the ground and heard more gunshots behind me, the zip of bullets way too close. Lying on the pavement, I turned and saw Corson and Bruce coming toward us up the street, guns drawn. Bruce was closing fast, firing away, but Corson was slow and getting slower, like he was already on the verge of giving up. I heard a gasping grunt from Jerry behind me, and a couple of fat red drops splattered on the pavement. There were a few more shots in each direction, then they both stopped. I looked around and saw that Jerry was gone. When I looked back, I saw Bruce coming right at me. I got to my feet and put up my hands, open and empty, telling Bruce to hold on a second. Instead, he pointed his gun at me. Then that asshole pulled the trigger. Maybe he wasn't aiming at me, because the shot was way high and wide left, but my right hand decided it was close enough, and it tugged the gun out of my waistband and put one in Bruce's temple. He took two more steps, turning to look at me with a confused expression that melted as I watched. Then he stumbled and went down, not bleeding nearly enough for a guy who wasn't already dead. "Shit," I muttered, annoyed at myself and the situation. Corson was still 30 feet away, huffing and puffing, and looking more concerned about his angina or whatever than about the fact that I just downed his man. He looked relieved when I pointed my gun at him, warning him not to come any closer as I looked around for any sign of Jerry. As I got back in my car, I saw Corson doubled over, trying to catch his breath. I cursed again and smacked the dashboard as I drove off. In the rear view, Corson turned around and walked slowly back the way he had come. The address for Jerry Costa's girlfriend was a tiny bungalow that looked like a trailer but wasn't. It had white siding with black mold under the gutters and green mold behind the overgrown bushes. Jerry's car was parked out front, one wheel up on the curb. There was a splash of blood on the front step and some more on the doorknob. The door wasn't locked, so I went in. A trail of bloody left shoe prints led through the darkened living room. I followed them into the dining room and spotted Jerry on the kitchen floor, slumped against the cabinets. His left leg was soaked in blood, and it looked like he was leaking from the ribs, too. The welt on his forehead had grown into a purple lump, and I felt a twinge of guilt for having hit him like that. He smiled when he saw me, but it was a tired smile, like it was taking everything he had. "What are you doing here? You think you're going to hand me over?" He had a gun in one hand, resting on his lap, but leveled in my direction. It looked big in his small hand, like a cannon, a lot bigger than the snub nose he had earlier. He would have had trouble handling it even if he hadn't been shot to pieces. His other hand was inside a box of cheese crackers on the floor at his side. His chin was dotted with orange crumbs. As I walked into the kitchen, the gun followed me with small, jerky movements. I kept my distance, leaning against the counter on the other side of the room. "What the fuck are you doing, Jerry?" He put a cracker in his mouth, then started coughing and quickly put his hand back in the box. "I'm out of here."
"Out of here?"
"Out of here. Fuck this place. Fuck these people. Fuck Corson." He smiled again. "No offense, Bliss, but fuck you too. It's time for me to walk away."
"So why didn't you just walk away?"
He laughed and started coughing again.
"Takes money to walk away, Bliss. I figure, what the hell? What's the difference owing 40 grand to 5 people or owing 100 grand to 8 people?"
"Makes a big difference to Corson." He laughed at that.
"Yeah, I guess it does. And I'm sorry I stiffed you for the 2 bills. I always liked you, Bliss."
"You paid me back the 200, remember?" He smiled.
"Oh yeah, I did, didn't I? Well, sorry about the thing with Hudson. I know that was fucked up, but I knew Hudson wasn't going to get over you. Not a chance."
He seemed to squeeze the last few words out, rushing ahead of a cough that sprayed bloody cracker crumbs down his shirt. "What was that all about, anyway?" I asked. His shoulders twitched like he was trying to shrug.
"Hudson wanted the money I owed him, and that crazy bitch was never going to let up. Especially not when Corson sent him after me, too. I knew he'd think you were collecting for Corson, but I knew you'd get the jump on him. I knew you were better than him."
He smiled.
"Bliss."
He said it like it didn't mean anything. It was just something he enjoyed saying.
"You knew he'd try to kill me? You set me up to kill the fucking guy?" "Hey, I said I was sorry."
As fucked up as it was, somehow, looking down at him, I couldn't even get that angry.
"You're a real prick, Jerry, you know that?"
He smiled and started to say something, but he was interrupted by a loud, wheezy laugh coming from the dining room. Corson stood in the doorway, gun in hand, looking down at Jerry.
"What a fucking mess. Look at you."
Jerry angled his gun away from me and over toward Corson. He stuffed another cracker in his mouth, then his hand went back in the box. Corson didn't seem to notice or care. He looked over at me.
"Bliss,
So what do I do with you? You lead me to Jerry, but you take out Bruce. Jerry looked over at me. You killed Bruce? Man, you are a tiger. Shut up, asshole, Corson snapped. So did Bruce owe you money too? I asked. Corson laughed. You know what? Come to think of it, he did. Ah, fuck it. Tomorrow's payday. We would have been even. And he was a pain in the ass anyway. We'll call that one even. But this guy... He slowly made his way around the opposite side of the room. Get back, asshole, Jerry mumbled, the gun in his hand shaking now. I swear to God I'll fucking shoot you. Really? Corson asked tauntingly, creeping around the perimeter of the room. I don't know. You're not looking so good there, Costa. Fuck you. Jerry followed him with the gun at first, but as Corson approached him from the side, Jerry couldn't seem to get the gun pointed sideways at him. You fucked up, Costa, Corson continued. I gave you a job, let you pretend to be one of the guys. Hell, I even let you suck my dick. And for that, you ripped me off. Now look at you. Got yourself all shot up. I'm not even that angry. I'm hurt. Corson spoke quietly, inching closer. Jerry's eyes looked sleepy. But I'm giving you an out, Corson continued. You know you're tired of running, tired of hiding. You tell me where my money is, I'll let you off the hook. Then you can relax. He was approaching Jerry from the side now, and Jerry's gun wasn't pointed anywhere near him. Close your eyes, Corson said softly. Close your eyes. He was sliding along against the kitchen counter, and when he got to where Jerry was, he reached down and took the gun out of Jerry's hand. Then he smiled and backhanded the gun hard across Jerry's face. Blood spurted from Jerry's mouth, and I could hear the tick, 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 tick of teeth skittering across the floor. Steal from me, you little fuck, Corson spat. Now tell me where my fucking money is. Fuck you, Jerry spat out, sounding different with the teeth missing. Bloody bits of cracker and tooth tumbled out of his ruined mouth and down the front of his shirt. Corson sighed and put the gun in his pocket, then reached over and pulled a knife out of the wooden block on the counter. You know you're dying, Costa, so I'm not going to threaten to kill you. But you got enough life left in you that I could make it mighty unpleasant. I know you weren't planning on leaving without taking some money with you. So I'm asking again, where's my fucking money? He gave Jerry a friendly smile. Come on, you know you're going to give me what you owe me. You can't take it with you, right? Jerry took another cracker from the box and shoved it past his shattered teeth. I winced. Fuck you, he said, spraying cracker everywhere. His eyes were scared and wet. Corson crouched down in front of him, practically between his legs, looking him in the face as he thumbed the blade of the knife. Then get ready to feel some pain. I had killed two people that day and almost been killed a couple times myself, and it was all Jerry's fault. It wasn't like Corson was asking for anything other than his own money back, but still, I didn't want to just let him torture Jerry. With the tip of the knife, Corson sliced through the laces of Jerry's right shoe, the one that wasn't bloody. Jerry's face contorted, like with some kind of effort. A grim, knowing smile spread across Corson's face, but as he tugged off the shoe, Jerry's box of crackers exploded. Corson's head snapped back, an arc of blood following it, splashing across the cabinets. Still gripping Jerry's shoe, Corson tumbled backward into a heap behind the kitchen door. Burning bits of cracker drifted down through the air, like flaming snow in some Christmas snow globe from hell. I stamped out a couple of the bigger pieces and looked down at Jerry. His lips and his chin were covered with bloody crumbs, but he was smiling wide, like he would have been laughing if he had the energy. Through the tattered hole where the bottom of the box used to be, I could see his hand wrapped around the same snub-nosed revolver he had pulled at the ATM. Smoke curled up from the barrel and from the singed crackers still in the box.
"Is that cocksucker dead?"
Jerry asked quietly, crumbs falling away from his lips. I nudged Corson with my foot, but there was nothing. He had a hole in his forehead, and his eyes were open and blank. "Yeah, Jerry, I'm pretty sure he is."
"Guess I gave him what I owed him then."
His smile faded away as the gun slipped out of his hand, sliding to the floor on a wave of burnt orange crackers. Two bricks of cash wrapped in plastic fell out after it. Jerry's eyes looked down at them, but his head didn't move. "Nice bundles," I said.
"Fuck," he rasped.
I kicked the gun away from him, but left the money where it was.
"Don't take my fucking money," he said, so quiet I could barely hear him.
I was silent for a few seconds, waiting until he took another breath. "Why?" I asked. "What are you going to do with it?" I wasn't fucking with him, not mostly. I really wanted to know.
"I'm getting the fuck out of here," he whispered, struggling to raise his head so he could breathe, snatching one more breath out of the air like an old dog snapping at a fly. "I'm blowing this joint."
20 seconds passed before he took another breath.
"And you can all just kiss my ass."
I waited another minute to see if he was going to take another breath, but he was dead. I touched his neck, but there was no pulse. They say dead is an either-or proposition. You're either dead or you're not. But looking down at Jerry Costa, I couldn't help feeling that with every breath that I took and he didn't, he seemed to be getting deader. I picked up the money and eyeballed it. 50s and hundreds, maybe 40 grand. I was just starting to wonder what I might do with it when the answer to that question walked in the door. Frank Vero was standing in the dining room, watching. He was a big guy, 6'2", and solid still in his early 60s. He seemed to be traveling alone, without muscle, which was strange.
"I was told I might find you here," he said in his deep, rumbling voice as he walked into the kitchen.
Then, looking at the carnage,
"If you're in the middle of something, I could come back later."
He paused, tilting his head at Jerry.
"Is that Jerry Costa?"
I nodded. Vero grunted.
"Son of a bitch owed me money."
He looked down at the shredded box of crackers, then at the bundles of cash in each of my hands. He reached out and took one.
"Just about this much, in fact."
I nodded again. Like I said, I didn't know Vero real well, just to play cards, but I knew enough not to say too much. He ran his thumb across the bundle, without unwrapping it, then nodded and shoved it under his arm. He looked over at the spray of blood across the cabinets and followed it to Corson's body, heaped behind the kitchen door.
"Is that Fred Corson?"
I nodded.
"He owed me money, too."
"Probably about this much, I guess, right?" I asked, holding up the other bundle.
"Close enough. You're a smart kid," he said as he took it.
He popped the plastic, taking his time thumbing through it.
"Jack's over aces, wasn't that it?"
I rubbed my nose and tried not to look nervous. I didn't know which way this was going. "Yeah, that was it."
"Hell of a hand."
He shook his head and tore open the package some more.
"Here's what I owe you,"
he said, pulling out two bundles of hundreds
and handing them to me without looking up.
Plus some extra.
He gestured at the bodies on the floor.
Finder's fee or whatever.
I nodded, but didn't say anything. He shoved the rest of the cash under his arm and shook his head again, smiling.
Still can't believe you weren't bluffing.
I don't bluff with that kind of money on the table, but I didn't tell him that.
Okay, then, he said, looking around the kitchen again. I'll let you get back to whatever. See you at the card game Friday night, right?
I nodded.
Good.
He gave me a wink.
Gotta make my money back somehow.
Thank you for listening to The Crime Wave. I'm your host, Seth Harwood. I hope you'll check out the rest of the stories here on Crime Wave and tell your friends about it. It's the CRIMEWAV. Help pass the word, register at our site so that you can participate in the forums and add comments to the episodes. You can email us with questions or comments at info@crimewave.com. Aldo, the mystery dog, and I will get your email and we'll get back to you right quick. You can also call the K7 line, 206-350-4998, to leave comments or feedback. And if you leave a great message, we'll even play it at the end of a show. So drop a line, hop on the website, visit often, spread the word, and thank you for stopping by The Crime Wave.
In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.